Good morning, and thank you for joining us. It's time for the iHeart Community Spotlight, a weekly public affairs presentation of iHeart Radio Salinas Monterey. I'm Mark Carbonero, your host. Our special guest today is Shelley Jensen from JDRF, formerly known as the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. Shelley, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me.
And I guess the first thing we can do is start in with a definition of what we're talking about here. We want to talk about diabetes, what's going on in the latest fight against type 1 diabetes, and also the name change of your organization, because that goes right to the heart of the topic that we're talking about. So why don't we start right there with, there are two types of diabetes. For many years, type 1 was known as juvenile onset diabetes, and type 2 was known as adult onset diabetes. But those terms have gone by the wayside, and in fact, your organization now just goes by the moniker JDRF rather than Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. So why don't we start with some explanation of why things have changed?
That's a very good point, Mark. Thank you. So we no longer say juvenile diabetes because type 1 diabetes, first of all, can strike at any age. It does strike children. It also strikes adults. And in fact, about 50% of new diagnoses are adults, young adults, and sometimes older adults.
Mm.
And currently living with type 1 diabetes, about 84% of the people are adults. And that's partly because adults are getting diagnosed and also because the children are growing up to be adults. And so we no longer use the word juvenile diabetes. We just refer to type 1 diabetes.
And you were telling me that in an earlier conversation, type 1 is an autoimmune disorder, right?
That's right. So it's not the same as type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease in which a person's pancreas stops producing insulin. And insulin is a hormone that enables people to get energy from food. And so when the autoimmune attack happens to a person with type 1 diabetes, it strikes the pancreas and the person can no longer produce insulin. Type 2 diabetes is a metabolic disorder where the person can still produce insulin, but just not as effectively. And so can often be treated with diet and lifestyle changes. If you have type 1 diabetes, you cannot treat it solely with diet and lifestyle changes. You must administer insulin in some way to just stay alive.
So the autoimmune disorder is one that the individual has absolutely no control over from the standpoint of diet and exercise.
That's right. It doesn't discriminate. And at this point, there is nothing you can do to prevent it.
Mm-hmm. Do we know why adults are being afflicted with type 1 diabetes? We always had heard that it was a problem for children, but has there been any research that's gone into defining or coming up with the reason behind the incidence of type 1 diabetes in adults?
Right. Well, it is on the rise with both children and adults, and adults have always been part of the population affected by type 1 diabetes. It's just, I think, we tended to focus more on the children, and we're more, our heartstrings are attached more to the children for obvious reasons, and so I think we hear about that more, but it's never discriminated between children and adults, and in fact, it is on the rise with both children and adults, particularly with children under the age of 5.
And we don't know any particular reason why this is happening at this point.
Well, we're investigating those reasons, and there is, at the moment, some understanding of maybe environmental triggers, as well as some genetic components, but we're still investigating as to why the body attacks itself.
This is a very personal thing for you, Shelley. Besides working for JDRF, you actually have type 1 diabetes.
That's right. And I'm one of the 50% of adults who was diagnosed in my 20s. And I was about 26 years old. And I had all the classic symptoms, which we can go over if you'd like. There are some warning signs.
Before we do that, I want to ask you about your own personal experience with this.
Right.
It must have been an absolute eye-opener for you when you were diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, because you were probably like the rest of the population. Well, wait a minute, how can I have that? Shouldn't I have, you know, gotten that when I was a kid?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When this happened to me, like I said, I was about 26 years old, and in some ways I'm very lucky because I could feel there was something wrong with me, and I went to see an internist, and I didn't have to spend time in the hospital. He was able to let me know what was going on right there in his office. So we caught it very early, which is lucky for me. People wind up often in the hospital for days to get their bodies back on track and to learn how to take care of themselves. But at first, my doctor thought I had type 2 diabetes because I was an adult. And there's a lot of misconceptions, even in the medical community, of the differences between type 1 and type 2. So it was automatically assumed, oh, you must have type 2 diabetes.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have any of the signs of that, at all the signs of type 1. And so we quickly realized it was type 1, thankfully. There are a lot of misdiagnoses because of the misconceptions.
No, I tell you that a friend of mine was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I believe she was 15 years old at the time,
really?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was common for so many people that have had type 1 diabetes, or when they're first diagnosed with it, they're either below the age of 9, 10 years old, or in their early to mid-teens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hers, it was a really scary situation. They were, she hadn't felt very well for a number of days, but they just figured was, you know, just maybe a cold or the flu or something, that you'd get over it. And they were on a family vacation, and they were driving somewhere, and she went into a coma.
Oh, gosh. Oh.
And fortunately, there was a hospital nearby, and they got her in there, and doctors immediately recognized what the situation was, and she got the medical care she needed, and she's now 50 years old and has been living with this for 35 years and doing very well. And I think that's the other thing that we're going to talk about as the program goes on, is that people can live full, happy lives with this autoimmune disorder.
Mm-hmm, that's right, and I'm glad to hear your friend is doing well. But when I was diagnosed, one of my first questions was, well, wait a minute, can I have children? And I was told, yes, you can. Probably 10 years prior to that, I might have been told, no, you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to have two very healthy children, and I'm so grateful for that. And part of the reason I was able to do that was with some of the amazing technology that was available even 10 years ago with the insulin pump and the continuous glucose monitor. It gave my team of doctors the tools needed to keep an eye on me and keep my management as in control as possible so that the babies were very healthy.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead. Now that we've gotten some really great background information, let's talk a little bit about JDRF, all right?
Yes.
So let's start off with the organization. Who is JDRF?
So JDRF is the leading global organization funding type 1 diabetes research. And our mission is to accelerate life-changing breakthroughs to cure, prevent, and treat type 1 diabetes and its complications. And we partner with all kinds of organizations and academic institutions, policymakers, corporate and industry partners to develop and deliver a pipeline of innovative therapies to people living with type 1 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And you had described to me that you first got it when you were the age of 26,
mm-hmm.
and that 50% of the diagnosis now of type 1 diabetes are adults. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's actually a pretty steady statistic. And like I said, there is an increase, and it's on the rise with both children and adults. And by the year of 2050, we expect about 5 million people to have it, and that includes a threefold growth in youth with type 1 diabetes, 600,000 kids by 2050.
Shelley, what is the body doing when the autoimmune system attacks the pancreas? What exactly happens?
So it's attacking the beta cells that produce the insulin inside your pancreas. It's attacking those beta cells that are no longer able to produce the hormone insulin.
And how do we use insulin? How do we use insulin, and why is it important?
Insulin is the hormone that helps us turn food into energy. And so when that doesn't happen, you wind up with glucose in the bloodstream, and that's dangerous.
And that raises your sugar level, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you're not able to process the glucose or the sugar level as the normal pancreas would. You're not
that's
able
right.
to process that
mm-hmm.
and, you know, use it for what it needs to be used for, and the rest goes as the waste stream, you know, and
right.
everything else. Okay.
That's right. So I have to monitor that. I have to be my own pancreas. I have to use my insulin pump to administer insulin throughout the day. And then every time I eat, I have to calculate how much insulin I need and administer that,
mm-hmm.
testing myself all day long. And then if I exercise, that affects my glucose levels, my blood sugar levels.
How so?
Well, it just, the exercise does bring it down, and that can sometimes lead to dangerous lows, hypoglycemia. And so this is a disease where the medication that we use to treat ourselves can often be dangerous if you don't have it perfectly in balance.
You have to be careful about how you exercise, how much you exercise, but you also have to be careful that you don't exercise too little as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a constant balance, 24/7. And, you know, the dangerous lows are something that everybody with type 1 diabetes is very, very well aware of, and parents of kids with type 1 diabetes are very well aware of. And in fact, most dangerous times are at night especially when you're sleeping and you don't realize that your glucose levels might be slipping really low, that can be very, very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you talk about the fact now that that people have the ability with the new technology, diabetics have the ability to better monitor their glucose levels with the pump. You're getting the exact amount of insulin that you need at that time. And
that I have to calculate myself.
So you have to calculate.
You know, we're not always perfect at that calculation.
Right, so. Right. But it has to be a great march forward from the days of when you would use the syringe and give yourself a shot.
Which I started out doing when I was diagnosed, and a lot of people still do today. Not everybody is on the insulin pump. Everybody uses the therapy that's right for them. But I like the insulin pump because it just helps me monitor throughout the day. And big, big news is this artificial pancreas that was just approved by the FDA.
Really?
And so what that does is take the insulin pump and the continuous glucose monitor, two devices that are currently in use, and it takes these two devices and lets them talk to each other so that if your glucose level is slipping low, the insulin pump will shut off. And that helps alleviate especially the fear and the danger of sleeping at night and worrying about your blood level going to glucose level going too low at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that was big news in the type 1 diabetes community. On September 30th is the big day when the news broke, and this is the Medtronic MiniMed 670G was approved by the FDA, and it caused big celebration in our office and in the entire type 1 diabetes community around the country.
Is this going to be this artificial pancreas is something that will actually be surgically put into someone's body to take the place of their pancreas?
It's outside of your body. It is an insulin pump, so it's something, an insulin pump has an infusion set that's like a soft plastic needle that goes under your skin.
Okay.
So, but the insulin pump itself is outside of your body. You just kind of wear it on your body. And then the continuous glucose monitor is another infusion that is intravenously kind of under your skin, and that monitors your glucose level, but now these two can talk, and that's the artificial pancreas part of it.
Okay.
It's a closed loop system that can talk to each other, and if you are dangerously low, it will shut off. And it just administers your insulin throughout the day. You still have to take extra insulin when you eat, but this is a huge step forward.
Boy, it sure sounds like it.
Huge step forward. And, you know, this is the kind of treatment and research that JDRF funds and advocates for approval. And so JDRF is very, very excited and proud about this historic moment in type 1 diabetes care.
How long has this been in the pipeline?
It's been about 10 years running. And, you know, over $100 million put into this project. And, you know, we're looking at other artificial pancreas systems as well. This is just the first one to be approved by the FDA.
So when people are making contributions to JDRF for research, this is the kind of payoff.
That's right.
That you're looking for.
This is real life-changing research. It's real, real progress.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go back to the type 1 diabetes itself and describe for the audience what the warning signs of type 1 diabetes are. Maybe you can run us, run down the list for us if someone is experiencing these things, or maybe their child is, that they would want to seek medical care.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of misdiagnosis still in the medical community. And so it's really important to know the warning signs. And some of the biggest warning signs are extreme thirst. And I just can't tell you the thirst that you wind up feeling when you have type 1 diabetes. And to tell you the truth, I'm not sure why that happens, but I remember it very well. And it's just extreme thirst. You're tired all the time. There's frequent urination, just way more than, and that's partly because of drinking so much because you're so thirsty, but also because your body is just flushing out nutrients. An increased appetite, and then this is something that happened with me, sudden unexplained weight loss. I remember when I was, 26, and I was so rail thin, the point where my family members were worried about me, wondering why I was so skinny, and I had no way to explain why. And so that was a big warning sign for me. I didn't know that was a warning sign for type 1 diabetes at the time, but looking back, I had all the classic symptoms. You also might have a fruity odor in your breath and maybe some vision changes. So those are some classic warning signs.
Mm-hmm. Sugar in the urine is another one?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And so, oftentimes you might be sent home. Oh, you just have the flu, like what happened with your friend. This can happen, and it's all too common. So I'm glad to get the word out of the warning signs.
Okay, that is really good that you provide us with this information. Now, as we also talk a little more about type 1 diabetes, some of the other effects of it, there is something called diabetic retinopathy, and sudden vision changes remind me of that. Maybe you could describe to us what diabetic retinopathy is.
Yeah, well, that's a eye disease that can happen from having type 1 diabetes, and that's just related to nerve damage. But, you know, that's one of the things that JDRF spends its research on is complications. And we helped to fund a drug called Lucentis that was developed by Genentech, which was approved a few years ago. And that helps to cure diabetic-related eye disease. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so nerve damage, that is one thing that can happen with both type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
If you have that nerve damage to the eyes, is it permanent, or is there any cure for that or fix?
Well, this Lucentis does help fix that. So that's a huge relief to people with type 1 diabetes to know that, you know, if this does happen with your eyes, there is this amazing drug out there that can help.
Now, one of the other issues you have to watch out for would be heavy or labored breathing and stupor or unconsciousness. Yeah, talk about that.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's when it's in a really dangerous progress where you haven't been diagnosed yet and it hasn't been identified and it's gone on too long, that might happen.
Okay.
That didn't happen to me, luckily. Like I said, I felt this like overall lethargy and, you know, this unexplained weight loss was the biggest thing that brought me to the doctor. And then the extreme thirst, which I just didn't know why that was happening.
Now, let me ask,
luckily, I was diagnosed early on.
Mm-hmm. You talk about unexplained weight loss. Were you heavy or were you of average weight? What got you so concerned about the weight loss?
Well, I was already a pretty thin person.
Okay.
So when I dropped about 15 pounds, which for me at the time set me into like really skinny territory. And so that's when my family members got concerned.
And you said, wait a minute, this isn't right.
Yeah, I wasn't overweight and then became average weight. I was already pretty thin and then just lost a lot of weight.
So if any of our listeners, if they experience these symptoms, they may well be experiencing, or their child, type 1 diabetes, the onset of that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's exactly what you have. You need to go to a doctor and get diagnosed. Anytime you don't feel right, it's a good idea to get to the doctor.
Yeah, and it's so simple to test your blood sugar. It's a simple test in the doctor's office.
And they can tell you within what, minutes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a glucose meter, I mean, it's a simple pinprick, and you can see what your blood glucose level is within like 10 seconds. And if it's a normal blood sugar level is like 120.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're up past 200, that's concerning. And if you are already experiencing type 1 diabetes and haven't been diagnosed yet, it can be way high, you know, 400, 500. And you know that's what's happening.
Sure.
So it's a simple test.
I think one of the things that's amazing is when you talk about type 1 diabetes and if you go back in history and we're not talking about going back 200 years or anything like that, but even you go back into the last century, into what we would kind of consider somewhat modern times, you know, if you're talking about the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, some of the ways that they actually would have, you know, check people's blood sugar was place your urine, like a sample of urine, in a glass next to the window. And if flies and bugs are drawn to it, it means you've got too much sugar.
Yeah, we've come so far.
That was state-of-the-art medicine 60, 70 years ago.
At-home glucose meters have only been available since like the 1980s.
Okay.
And so before that, it was these urine tests, and you could go into your doctor's office and get a blood sample tested. But that, I mean, it's incredible the advancements we've had in the last several decades.
Now, we've talked quite a bit about type 1 diabetes, but I also wanted to just touch on type 2 diabetes. It is very different from type 1 diabetes, and perhaps if you might, for those who are just tuning into the program now, Shelley, and I know that JDRF's focus is type 1 diabetes and not type 2, but perhaps if you can give us kind of a thumbnail of what typifies type 2 diabetes.
Well, you know, like I said, JDRF focuses on type 1 diabetes, and I'm not an expert at all on type 2 diabetes other than a couple of my family members who have had it. But it is much more common. It's about 29 million Americans have some form of diabetes. Mm-hmm. And of those, it's about 5% who have type 1 diabetes.
Okay.
So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease in which a person's body turns on itself and there's an autoimmune attack onto the pancreas. And inside the pancreas where the insulin-producing beta cells are attacked and they're no longer able to produce insulin.
Mm-hmm.
Type 2 diabetes is a metabolic disorder in which a person can still produce insulin but is unable to use it as effectively. And so type 2 diabetes can often be treated with, you know, diet and lifestyle changes.
Right.
That a person with type 1 diabetes can help manage and can lead a healthier life with changes to diet and lifestyle, but that will not solely treat type 1 diabetes. A person with type 1 diabetes must administer insulin in order to stay alive.
Okay. And I seem to remember from people that I knew that had the two different types of diabetes was that those that that had type 1 were taking shots of insulin. And then, but I remember people with type 2 would take like a pill or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, people with type 2 diabetes, it's more of a metabolic mm-hmm. disorder. And so these pills can help the metabolism.
Okay.
Somebody with type 1 diabetes, you know, there might be some other pills that can help with some of the management, but you're dependent on administering insulin.
Okay. And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you about was when someone goes into a doctor for a check, do they discover type 2 the same way as type 1 with a blood glucose test, or is it differently?
Yeah, so that is one thing that the two diseases have in common is that your blood sugar levels go up.
All right.
And again, that's a simple test.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a very simple test that you can take if you suspect you might have either one of those
All right.
types.
Now, there is, you know, besides the good news that you've shared with us about the artificial pancreas and many of the other great new advances that are coming forward for people suffering from type 1 diabetes, there is a really fun event coming up on Sunday, October 30th at Lovers Point Park in Pacific Grove. It's a benefit for JDRF, and it raises money for research that ends up giving us the advances that we've been talking about on the program this morning. So let's talk a little bit about what is coming up on Sunday the 30th.
Yes, so it's the JDRF One Walk, and it's taking place at the beautiful Lovers Point Park in Pacific Grove. And it's a walk. It's about 3 miles. And the goal is to raise about $236,000 at this event. This is in its 19th year.
Oh, great.
In Monterey Bay. And over the last couple decades, we've raised close to $5 million.
Just from Monterey alone.
That's right. It's such a supportive community, and we love this walk, and we expect close to 1,000 people to show up on Sunday.
That's
There's
great.
Still time to register. And you just need to go to walk.jdrf.org/Monterey Bay.
Okay, walk.jdrf.org?
/Monterey Bay.
Okay, and this will be on Sunday the 29th. What time does it start?
Sunday the 30th.
Sunday the 30th, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
This will be on 3, 2, 1. This will be on Sunday the 30th. What time does it all get going?
So the check-in starts at about 9:30 in the morning, and then the walk itself starts at 11 a.m. There's lots of festivities and things prior to the ribbon cutting, and it's really, really fun. It's a great, fun, family-friendly event, and families show up, corporate teams get together and come,
mm-hmm.
you know, individuals come, you know. It's just a really fun, celebratory day for people who have type 1 diabetes. It's one of my favorite days of the year.
Yeah.
As somebody who has it, I love going to the walk. It just makes me feel like, okay, we're all here in support of each other, and we know that with this kind of support and fundraising for research, we're going to beat this.
All right. How do you raise the money there? How does that whole element of it come together?
So people register for the walk, and you just go to walk.jdrf.org/Monterey Bay, and you can sign up through a participant center, and it's really, really simple online, and you just register your name and you invite other people to join your team, and it's a really great online tool for managing your fundraising. It gives you all kinds of tips, and it's easy to post on Facebook through this tool, and it's amazing how much people can raise just by asking their friends and coworkers and neighbors, and people want to give.
Okay. By the way, describe the route for us.
Well, it's through beautiful Lovers Point Park, and I think you've been there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is wonderful, and people love it. It's a great, you know, outdoor activity, and it's just, it's really fun. People walk together, and like I said, it's about 3 miles.
Right. And do you start at Lovers Point Park and walk towards Asilomar, or are you walking towards the aquarium in Monterey? Go online and check it out. But I know because there are a lot of walks and runs that take place there. Some go back towards, you know, the golf course and Asilomar and come back around, and some will go down to the aquarium and circle back. Either way, it's a fabulous route. You're right there on the water. It's beautiful. Do folks get like a T-shirt or something like that that's commemorative?
Yeah. So we hope that you raise $100 each person, and if you raise $100, you get a T-shirt, and it's a great little T-shirt, and you also get a lunch, and there's, you know, snacks, and it's just, it's a fun, festive day.
Super. And is there information that people can pick up there, pamphlets about JDRF and other, you know, information about what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll have a booth with all kinds of information about JDRF and all the great research that's happening with us. There's other vendors who will be there from the type 1 diabetes community, so there's lots to celebrate and learn while you're there that day.
Sounds great. Well, we'll look forward to it. Now, I get to be there that day because I appreciate the fact you folks have invited me to be the MC, and we'll get a chance to welcome all the runners and walkers as they're coming back in from the event.
Yes. The second year in a row, Mark. We're so happy to have you back.
Well, thank you very much, Shelley. I'm looking forward to it. It is coming up on Sunday, October 30th at Lovers Point Park in PG. And Shelley, once again, the website.
walk.jdrf.org/Monterey Bay.
All right. Shelley Jensen with JDRF has been our guest this week on the iHeart Radio Community Spotlight, a weekly public affairs program of iHeartRadio Salinas Monterey. I'm your host, Mark Carbonaro, Public Affairs Director, and if you have any comments or questions for us about our program, all you need to do is just drop us a line here at the radio station, 903 North Main Street, Salinas, California, 93906. And thank you once again for listening to the iHeartRadio Community Spotlight.
Thank you, Mark.